Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Let's talk about what's up in Burnaby. Joining me today is Srishti Gang Dev, reporter with the Burnaby Beacon. Welcome to the program.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for being here. So let's get right into the stories for this week. Transport Canada and Nav Canada have been planning proposed a rerouting of the flight paths to and from Vancouver International Airport that will see newly routed flights over a number of Burnaby neighborhoods. People were upset about this when the new routes were announced a few months ago, and we talked about that before. And now they're taking some action. What's happening?
Yeah, so this had caused quite a flutter, like you said, a few months ago, when residents of North Burnaby realized that they might be hearing a lot more aircraft traffic over their homes and their neighborhoods. And there's a group of people now in North Burnaby who have put together a petition to the Government of Canada to get them to reconsider this thing before it goes through. And as of last week when I checked, it actually had about 600 signatures, which is over the 500 that you need to get this thing in front of the House of Commons. How e-petitions to the government work is that they have to be sponsored by an MP and they have to have at least 500 signatures before they're taken to the House of Commons, and then the Government of Canada has to table a response. So in this case, it's been sponsored by Benita Zerillo, who's the MP in Port Moody and Coquitlam over there. And we'll have to see what response the Government of Canada has to this.
So will this be something that ends up, I don't know, maybe debate is too much of a word, but what happens in terms of being presented to the House of Commons? Is it something that comes up in the House itself or committee, or?
It'll come up in the House itself. And the petition specifically is asking for an independent review of the proposal along with an environmental assessment report. The person who put together the petition, or one of the people, Stannis Smith, is actually an architect who says he's worked on, some dozen airport terminal plans in his career. Mm-hmm. So he's saying that, Nav Canada is using outdated safety models, I guess you would call them, in terms of noise pollution. And international standards actually say that the level of noise that's safe for human hearing on a regular basis is lower than what Nav Canada is saying. So he wants them to look at whether Canada should just update its safety standards in general and then apply that to what would affect Burnaby.
Right. So, I mean, planes coming in and out of the airport have to fly in some way. Obviously, the most desirable way would be out over the water, but I guess depending on which way the wind's blowing, that's not always possible. So What reasons are Nav Canada giving for changing the routes? I mean, the route, I don't know how long the current routes have been in place, but I can't recall hearing a story about this before. Mm-hmm. So what was wrong with the old routes and why do they need new ones?
So as per my understanding, it's something to do with saving fuel, like an environmental aspect to it. We've reported this in the past, but it's basically the way that they're going right now takes up more fuel than the way that they would be going in this new proposal in terms of landing on a specific runway. So, of course, this won't affect every plane that lands at YVR. It's just planes coming from, you know, that certain eastward direction. But the idea here is to save fuel and become a little bit more environmentally friendly. And, you know, I will say that I live in Metrotown, which is currently a flight path. And, you know, does the plane sometimes interrupt my conversation? And sometimes there's a louder one and I'm like, oh, is that like a fighter jet? Maybe. but, you know, it's not the end of the world and you do get used to it.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's like living close to a rail line. You know, you definitely hear the trains go by, but in time you do get used to it.
Yeah, you become kind of like noise blind to it, or deaf to it, I guess is the word that you would use for that.
Yes.
I actually live right a block away from the SkyTrain line as well, and I don't notice the SkyTrain going by until someone says, like, what was that sound? So, yeah, you learn to tune it out.
Yeah, very similar. I live very close to a line as well. And the only time I really notice it is early in the morning when it's like, what time of night is it? No trains running. Must be very early.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we'll see where this goes.
Yeah.
I don't suppose you know what success anyone else has had with this kind of appeal elsewhere.
You know, I actually don't know off the top of my head, yeah. But that's a great question. And we'll definitely look into that as we continue following this story.
Great. In another story, Burnaby's history often gets passed over for the better known stories from Vancouver. There's the Burnaby Village Museum, of course, and they do a great job, providing, telling some of the stories of Burnaby. And it certainly is a really fun place to visit. But you've been looking into some of the other stories and have been digging into the story of Ocean View Cemetery.
Mm-hmm. This is a really cool piece of Burnaby history, mm-hmm. That I had no idea of until my colleague Simran published this story. So I think it's really cool. It's like a very well-known cemetery, of course. I'm sure we've all driven past it. Ocean View Cemetery on Imperial Street. You know, that gorgeous hill, very peaceful place to be laid to rest, probably. And I had no idea that it was the first non-sectarian cemetery in BC. So you didn't have to have any religious affiliation to be buried in that cemetery. And that was the first place in BC that worked like that.
Excellent. It's certainly, I've seen some of the pictures in your story, and it's a striking edifice that's part of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just thinking, how long does its history go back?
It was, it opened in 1918, I believe. So, mm-hmm. You know, as far as Burnaby history goes, that's quite an extensive history. I think it actually predates the city being incorporated itself. So it is quite a historic landmark in our part of the world.
Excellent. And now here's something I'm sure you're quite excited about. Your Burnaby's Reader's Choice Awards are out. The Beacon has been working on these for a while, and this is the first year for the awards. So who came out on top?
Yeah, we're so excited to be releasing these winners because it's been a bit of a passion project on our end, and we're really excited. And just before I tell you the big winner, we've released just the top names in each category for now, and we're going to be over the next few weeks releasing the top three in each category because we really do believe that these restaurants, you know, make up the fabric of our city and they deserve their moment in the sun. Mm-hmm. And with all that said, the best overall restaurant in Burnaby is Cayenne Bistro and Grill. And I don't know if you've been there, but it's really, really good food. It's African and Indian cuisine, which it's a really popular fusion style of food, relates to the British colonialism of Africa, and they're bringing huge numbers of Indian people over there. And they just created the Indian people who were sent there created this really unique flavor, melding both of these cultures together. And it's absolutely delicious food. And Cayenne does a really good job of it.
Perfect. And where in Burnaby is Cayenne?
It's on 6th Street. So right on the east side there.
Excellent. What other categories did you have in the awards and what that we'll be hearing about?
Well, we've got Best Pasta, and maybe you can guess who won this because it's a stalwart. Go ahead. Let's hear
it. I'm going to guess it's Anton's in the house.
It absolutely is Anton's. Okay. And I'm not surprised. You know, everyone loves Anton's. People come from far outside of Burnaby to visit Anton's and get their huge, huge portions. Mm-hmm. We've got the best seafood over at Cockney King's. Really, really good fish and chips. And then the best new spot is a really exciting one too, Wildflower Pizza Company, which serves up some really delicious, inventive pizzas, and it's definitely worth a try if you haven't been.
Where is Wildflower?
It is on Bainbridge Avenue, so not far from you.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So this is your first year. Yes. You focused on food this year. What are your plans for next year?
We're hoping to expand beyond restaurants and eateries next year for the second Reader's Choice Awards. We're going to look at local businesses. The boundaries are kind of open to us at the moment. So we'll have to see what exactly we can put into next year's categories.
Excellent. Well, looking forward to it. And we'll hear about some of the other runners up in coming weeks. As you say, I mean, they all deserve the attention they're getting for rising to the top of Burnabyites' love.
Exactly. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that. Srishti Gangdev of the Burnaby Beacon. Tell me about how they can find out about these stories and more.
Yeah. So you can head to burnabybeacon.com. Just enter your email in the little box that pops up there and you'll get a newsletter in your inbox every morning with, you know, local politics, news, events, crime, restaurants, everything that you need to know.
Perfect. Well, that's what's up in Burnaby this week. We'll be back next week. Thanks for joining me today, Srishti.
All right. We'll talk soon.
This is Bird Note. A torrent of shrill notes ricochets off the sheer stone walls of the Western Canyon. A pair of white-throated swifts careens by at high speed, revealing boldly patterned bodies. They twist and turn, sailing through the air on black scimitar-shaped wings spanning 15 inches. Dashing headlong across the canyon toward an unyielding wall, the birds disappear at the last second into a slender crevice. This swift is aptly named, and doubly so. Flying at tremendous speed, the white-throated swift is indeed swift, among the fastest of all birds. And its lyrical scientific name suits it perfectly, Aeronautes saxatalis, sailor of the air who dwells in the rocks. Swifts leave the air only to nest or roost in a cavity. You'll never see one perched. They do everything else while airborne. Ornithologist Percy Taverner said of them, when mating, a pair meet high in the air, cling together as though embracing for a moment, drop down hundreds of feet, then separate and catch themselves on their wings. The white-throated swift is on the watch list of many conservation organizations. To learn more, visit our website, birdnote.org.
Research shows that walking through a forest for just 15 minutes can lower symptoms of anxiety and depression and boost positive moods. What better way to welcome spring than by spending time among the trees? As a national nonprofit organization, Tree Canada works to improve the lives of Canadians by planting and nurturing trees in communities across the country. They support individuals, local groups, businesses, and municipalities to increase tree cover and help fight climate change. Join Tree Canada in growing better places to live by visiting treecanada.ca.
One of the best ways to prevent a tick bite is to apply a tick repellent before going outdoors. Although this seems like a simple solution, many people hesitate to make this a regular part of their routine. Two Canadian entrepreneurs are trying to change that and have developed a tick repellent for people and pets, as well as outdoor spaces like backyards, playgrounds, and even golf courses. Lisa Learning is an Indigenous entrepreneur who grew up in Labrador and is the founder of Atlantic Repellent Products. When Lisa wasn't satisfied with the synthetic tick repellents that were available for her family, she took matters into her own hands to create a natural botanical product for the Canadian market. Nancy Thompson is her business partner, who coordinates the scientific research. We reached Lisa in Blockhouse, Nova Scotia, and Nancy is joining us from Squamish, British Columbia. Welcome to our podcast, Lisa and Nancy.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Well, let's start with you, Lisa, to learn more about the evolution of your business, and then we can dive into the science with Nancy. Lisa, how did you become interested in creating a tick repellent?
Well, I've been an entrepreneur pretty much my whole life, and I've had a variety of different types of businesses. But this came about from a personal situation. We moved to Mahone Bay, Nova Scotia, and a neighbor warned us about the ticks, but I didn't pay much attention to it because I didn't understand what ticks and Lyme and all that really was until my boys started getting swollen knees and swollen ankles. We took them to the hospital. It was a mystery. We didn't know what was going on. And then it got to the point where my oldest boy at the time, he was 11, he couldn't walk anymore because he was in so much pain. So it was terrifying because when you don't know what's going on and the doctors don't know what's going on and then your son, who's only young, can't walk, you know, it was quite life-altering. But luckily, we did end up finding out that it was Lyme and they did get treated. But then I found out that you can get Lyme over and over again. So them being young boys and wanting to play outdoors, and me being a protective mom and, you know, wanting them to play, but I was a little scared. I started to look around for a tick repellent, and I didn't want to put DEET on them, but I couldn't find anything on the market that was natural and proven, a natural proven tick spray. So I didn't want to go to a farmer's market. There's lots there and that nothing wrong with farmer's markets, but if there was no scientific evidence behind it. It was all anecdotal. So I just started doing my own research, and I don't have a science background, but you don't need a science background to read the research papers and the synopsis and all that stuff. So that's what I started doing. And I figured out what essential oils repelled ticks the most from previous studies. Then I figured out what oils were best for your skin, etc. And I came up with my own formulas. I came up with three formulas originally. And then later on, I paired up with Acadia University because while I'd done my own research, I'm not a scientist, and I needed that scientific, you know, background from somebody. So I paired up with Acadia University, and we started to work on tick sprays and explore different options and started studying ticks. And then that's about the time that Nancy and I hooked up again, because we're both from the same hometown and grew up together more or less, but we hadn't really talked in about 20 years.
Wow.
And Lyme brought us together because Nancy gave me a call, and with Nancy's background and her project management background, et cetera, it worked out extremely well because she jumped into the picture, and then basically, we just started to come up with different ideas, and Nicoletta at Acadia, she helped us formulate a formula, and we since went on to create other formulas. But basically, long story short, it was because of my boys, and I just needed to have something for them that I felt safe putting on them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just really do want to acknowledge how difficult that must be. I mean, I know about Lyme through my own personal experience, but watching your children suffer is just a whole other level of suffering. So I'm glad you took an awful situation and made it into something really meaningful. And I'm just curious, what are some of the challenges that you've had to overcome in creating and selling your products?
Well, in the beginning, I thought it was going to be a fairly easy process. When I found out that it needs to be registered with Health Canada, I thought, oh, okay, no problem. And then I get into my computer and I open it up and I Google, you know, how do you do this? And I get on the Health Canada page and I was like, I just looked at it and went, oh dear God. It was a whole different language. So in Mahone Bay is a town full of self-employed people. And I literally went around to different businesses saying, hey guys, I don't know what I'm going to do here. Do you know anyone with a science background, et cetera? So one of them gave me a phone number of a lady from Acadia Entrepreneurship. I came home. I gave her a call. She wasn't there because it was lunchtime. I left a message, closed my phone, opened my computer. And Leanne Strathy was the lady I called. And Leanne Strathy was sending me an email message the same time I was calling her, asking me how to buy my spray.
So that's a great coincidence.
Oh my God, it was weird. But she put me in front of a whole bunch of different departments and different people because she didn't know how to help me either. So I presented my case to everybody. And then one of them in there, Lee from ICE is the acronym, she said, oh, I think I know who can help you. So Dr. Nicoletta Ferrone had just started working there, I believe 3 months prior. And she's a biochemist, something. Nancy will fill all that in, but she's a biochemist. And she just happened to have a background with insects and essential oils.
That is so amazing. The stars were,
now, I wish I could say, the spray was registered. It wasn't. It took about 5 years of a lot of ups and downs. I've said to Nancy before, it was like, it's like a bad relationship. It was like a bad relationship because right when you think everything's going good and, oh, this is great, all of a sudden you turn around and, man, it just crashes and you feel like you're going to cry.
Wow. So, but you persisted. Just, 5 years is a long time.
It is, but I've got that kind of personality, I guess, where I just can't give up on something. So
fair enough.
Anyway.
Now, can you tell me how people use the Atlantic repellents in the dryer? Because I know we've talked about that on our show before, that when you come inside, you know, you might want to put your clothes in the dryer for 10, 15 minutes to remove any ticks that you might be bringing into your house. But I think you guys do something different too, don't you?
Yeah. So basically, to kill ticks are resilient little buggers, mm-hmm. and they've been around since the dinosaur age. So they're here to stay. So when you come in and you take off your clothes, you throw them in the dryer because high heat can kill them and you want it to be dry heat. What the wool dryer balls do, basically, well, you put the scent on them as well to try to get a bit of that scent in your clothes and in the dryer. But it also makes sure that your clothes is being separated as it's going around the dryer and make sure it gets those ticks that might be in the little crevices, et cetera. It's just an extra added protection is all it is.
And then you can always go through your lint filter to see how many you found.
Oh, and yeah. Yes. Yep.
Can your products be used on pets? That's something I've had people ask me about for their animals. We have ticks out here on Vancouver Island already, and a friend of mine had found a number of ticks on her dogs and was saying, you know, what do I do? And I said, hey, I think I know the answer to that question.
So with Health Canada, the spray is registered for humans.
Okay.
But the oils that we use are safe on dogs and horses. So we get people who use it for their horses because we sell it in the big 500 ml bottles. And they use it on their dogs. Now, I have a dog. I use it on Bella. She hates it. Absolutely hates the smell. But she knows if she's going to go outside, she's got to put it on. So she just kind of puts her head down, she takes it. And then also you can do extra things too. Like you can get, we've got lava band collars. So the lava, see, when you spray it on yourself, you know, you're good for a few hours. But if you want that added little bit of, especially dogs roll around in the ground, they're running around, as soon as they start to sweat or if their mouth goes down near the ground, et cetera, the little ticks, they don't have eyes. They can only smell and they're going to smell you. So if you put something like a lava band collar on your dog and you soak it in the spray, that scent's going to last a long time. And again, extra added extra protection. Or if your dog has a bandana, spray it on the bandana as well as your dog.
Oh, that's great. That was my next question, actually, is do you apply it directly to the skin, or would you apply it to clothes or for your pets, their fur?
You do both. Yeah. And then when it comes to their little faces, you would just put it on your own hand first and then just kind of pet them and try to get under their chin and stuff, because it's the CO2 coming from your dog's mouth is going to trigger the ticks as well.
Mm-hmm. And just to be clear, I don't know if I, so you worked with Health Canada for 5 years and you actually did get your product registered, right? Last year, I think, last fall?
Yes.
Okay. So if people want, they can see that you've got a registered number and they're good to go.
Absolutely. And we'll be shouting it out come spring.
That's great. Well, we'll help you shout it out too.
Great.
Now, can your products be used in the outdoors, like in your yard or in your garden? Or I know I saw that some people might use it in golf courses, because that's honestly the reason I don't like golfing is going to look for the ball in the bushes.
I know. Well, we've got a couple things on the go. So the spray, the personal spray, the insect repellent, a lot of golfers use it because we sell it in the small 60 ml bottles you throw in your backpack, your golf bag, whatever. And you just put it on yourself, because it's going to keep, when you got to go in the woods, make sure you're sprayed, and then those ticks shouldn't be interested in you, and mosquitoes too, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
But with what we're doing in the background is we started out with just doing the personal spray, but then of course, as Nancy and I went on, you know, and ideas generate, because we don't want to just leave it at that, because it's exactly like you're saying, like, you know, I don't want to go out in my yard. In my front yard, I live in a town, and in my front yard, the deer are always there in the evenings dropping off ticks for us.
Mm-hmm.
So we've come up with a couple of different ground treatments that will kill the ticks, but is still environmentally friendly.
Wow, that's great. And, so it does actually kill the ticks. It doesn't just repel them.
That's right.
Wow. Yeah.
And then we're also working on a few other things for your clothing and different things like that. And like, I won't get in too much into that, but again, that's a Nancy thing more than me thing. But we have a few things going on, because we don't want to leave it at just the personal tick spray. We've got a lineup of other stuff that we want to keep putting out, because I don't want anybody else to go through that sickening feeling that we went through with my sons. So
absolutely. Yeah. And so we'll post links to your website and some of the information that we're referencing today. Where can people buy your products?
They can buy it in a variety of different stores across Canada. We have, I believe, every province. We may not have Saskatchewan, but we got pretty much every province.
That's great.
Covered.
Well
Mind
done.
You know, there's loads of room for expansion. We have Nova Scotia and the Atlantic provinces. We're spreading quite quickly here, but we really want to put a push further out west from the Atlantic provinces. But you can buy it. So you can buy it at stores. You can buy it at PetSmart, Sobeys. But you can also buy it online from our online store. And we do know how painful shipping is. So we only have a flat rate of $6.99 no matter what you buy, unless you're buying something that can go in an envelope, then that's free. But anything else, it's flat rate, to try to make it pretty easily accessible to people.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you so much. And now let's jump over to Nancy. And Nancy, I know you have a background in quality control, and I know you've been working with a lot of scientists conducting research. I'm curious to know more about tick behavior and the science behind these products. So what kind of research has Atlantic been involved in? And I know I know Lisa kind of introduced some of that, but let's take it over to you.
Well, excellent question. And we have, I feel like at this point, after 5 years, we've kind of been working in a few different directions, but as far as the research goes, because of the different products that we have in development. But as we're doing this work, we are discovering so much about the physiology of ticks and how they work. And so there have been a number of articles, peer-reviewed scientific articles that have been published since we began this work with Acadia to share that information with the rest of the scientific world. So I'm not sure if you want me to tell you specifically what some of those bits are, but it is.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. Like I did read through some of the articles you sent me, and one of them was really long, but I know that one of them was referencing like chemosensory sensilla, like different tick parts, right?
So it's hard to explain exactly what we're doing in ways that are really understandable and accessible. But what we are trying to do is trying to understand exactly how